This is a reprint of Rhett Webster's first dictionary, for anybody who's interested. It's kind of interesting to compare the definitions and still believe.
Is it more size printed?
It's good. It's big print. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's
an old English script?
It was 1828. That's the first dictionary in English.
It has J and Y. I.
It's just a novelty. Sometimes it's good just doing a word study and compare the derivation. Okay, I left off with number 6. Roman numeral 6, number 4. And we're under the general heading of the form of the text. Number 7. Roman numeral 7. Number 4. Okay, keep this, the two photocopies of this, of the text that I gave you out, if you're using them. I'm going to have to really fly. Okay, number 4 is just miscellaneous here for lack. There's really no heading for it. It's just stuff that didn't fall into the other three categories. In some of the text, they have lengthened letters. You'll see as you get to the end of the line, it looks like what happens on the photocopy or something. It gets stretched out. And it... there's certain words, there's only certain letters that they do that with, and they do it so to meet the end of the line so it comes out even in the old text. The early printed edition, they did that. And I don't have, there's no examples on these two handouts because they don't do it in these two texts. But the most of the other texts do. You get to the end of the line and you'll see an aleph or something, and it takes up two spaces, it's big, wide, same height, it's just the width is increased to bring it up to even at the end of the line. And there was only certain letters that they did that with. Run across that someplace. Not it either. Also, on a lot of the editions, they'll put the first word on the next page on the bottom of the preceding page. So there's no mistake where to start. They did that in the old manuscripts. You know exactly where it left off on one page to the next. The first printed edition. So if you see a word down at the bottom, it's not on either one of these, not on green. Green omitted it, so does VHS. But when you're reading it, go ahead.
This first page, you've got a lambda down the corner that strips down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that on green?
It's on the other one. I haven't moved it yet today. That's why.
Well, maybe, yeah. Maybe green does have that. Green is a reduced photocopy of... JPS text. Okay, good. Yeah, that's a good example. There's also, so Green's text does have it. If you look up the line, you'll see the same things done with an M in verse 13. Verse 10 has an L that way, and verse 9 has an M like that. On the left-hand side of the page, Isaiah 52, we're talking about.
Verse 12.
Pardon?
Verse 12.
nothing wrong with verse 12. Oh, 53:12. No, it's only on the left side that they do that. The tau there has done that with, yeah, verse 12. The T is the T. Yeah, but they only do it on the left side of the page, not on the right side. So, yeah, okay, green does. Biblically Hebraic, it does because they use a different printing system. But green's is based a photocopy of the JPS text, Jewish Publication Society text. And then he condensed it down and omitted a lot of things that they had in the text. So, but apparently he kept that. They couldn't do anything with that. I don't know. Okay. Omit the word at the bottom of the page. Apparently. A lot of times you'll see, I think Smate keeps that in the lower, it's usually in the lower left-hand corner of the page, and there'll just be a Hebrew word there, and you'll wonder what it is, and then it'll be the first word on the next page in Hebrew. Okay, now the punctuation. In addition to the vowel points, I gave you the vowel points. Yeah, vowel pointing was Roman numeral 6. Okay, this is the punctuation. Pardon? No, we're still on number 4. This is miscellaneous. Number 4, a part of Roman numeral 7. Punctuation, unless you know Hebrew, looks a lot like the vowel points underneath the letters. Some of them are on top and some of them are on the bottom. Most of them are on the bottom. There's only one that I'm going to point out for our purposes, and that is the asnak. Hard H, or sometimes they put a K there. Asnak. And it means rest. And it's the principal verse divider in Hebrew. And what it looks like, it's in different text, but it's a little wishbone thing. But sometimes it's just like that on this. Genesis 1, if you look under each verse, you'll find one someplace. Starting in verse 4, in the upper right-hand corner on the left page there, and the second word has it under. Okay, then you go to the next verse, and it would be on the second, the third line, the first word. Now, what this does in their judgment, and this is just a Masoretic judgment, is that it divides the verse in half. The first half is kind of like we use a semicolon or a comma sometimes, or it doesn't have an exact equivalent in English, but it's the main, they use it on every verse except where they're really short, and then they use another little symbol in its place. Unless it's a real short verse. But it's in their estimation, mainly for reading purposes, where they estimate that half the thought of the verse goes to that point, and then the rest continues. And it's lost in obscurity, really. A lot of it, in the old reading, how they read it, they paused, and then they went on. It gets into a lot of theories. Selah is involved in some of that too. Pause. But in reading, it apparently had something to do with reading, the way they read it. But sometimes it's important because it gives you their opinion. For example, you'll have two words and you'll wonder which
which clause to put it with, and by dividing a certain way, they'll tell you, that lets you know which side of that particular word would fall in their estimation. So if you come up, it's really hard to explain this without knowing Hebrew a little bit, but if you've got, say, three words, and you've got a word here, and you don't know whether it goes with this one or whether it goes with this one, and they put this little wishbone out here, and in their estimation, it modifies this or it goes with this word rather than this word, even though it may agree with either one, it goes with either one. So it acts like a commentary, in a sense. Sometimes it's not important. Most of the time it's not important, but sometimes it can be. The rest of the accents, there's ones that they divide this into. So the whole thing is divided up. The whole verse is divided up in similar to what we use conjunctions and commas for. Or disjunction. In every language, it's about, you have conjunctions and disjunctions. And a conjunction just adds to the thought. It's probably best represented in English by hand. And a disjunction breaks the thought with additional information. And that's probably best represented by but, or yet, or even a dash in English. It breaks the flow of the thought when conjunction adds to the thought. And these are terms that philologists use in studying languages when they break it down. And they try, when they translate, they try and break them down in these categories so you don't have exact equivalent. Well, the accents are broken down into conjunctions and disjunctions, accents. Conjunctive. Either side of the aspect, they use one or more of these accents to break up the verse. And for the best list of them, Phineas's grammar, which you want to grab that? Phineas's couch. He gives a list on pages 59 to 62 of all the accents. Well, almost all of them. So you run across something that Colin Dillich says about some weird accent, you want to know what he's talking about.
Sometimes that'll help. For our purposes, really the only one is really until you get to know the Hebrew.
It's the Asnath, and there's two other little ones. Sometimes, I'm not even going to give you the names because they're too technical, but there's an arrow this way and an arrow this way under a word. And that means that the word that it's under, in their estimation, goes with the next word. And if it goes this way, it goes with the preceding. And that's a real important tip-off sometimes, just like the Asnak is, as to which you take that particular word with which clause. Now, you can't put a whole lot of weight on that. That's just an opinion. So. And sometimes you get the, it's more of a flow that they get from reading it rather than it is an actual grammatical structure. So they have various reasons for doing that, but it does give a little tidbit of information. Okay, now under 8, Roman numeral 8, are there any questions on that? I don't want to go too fast, but I'm trying to get done so we can get into this thing. Otherwise, you're going to take it away. Let's see.
This, under this would be recording of the various textual phenomena information and information in the Masorah. So various textual information is recorded in the Masorah. Either the Masorah, Marsh analysis, or the Masorah, like analysis, any of the three sections usually. In this case, we call them the Masorah. Marginality. Okay, these are peculiarities now that are in the text, phenomena for lack of better terminology, that the Masoretes recorded, most of which goes back before then, almost all of it, with the exception of one category. The first category is suspended letters. It only occurs three places. It occurs in Psalms 80, verse 14, Job 38, 13 and 15, and Judges 18:30. So they're four in number. They're in these four scriptures, actually. There's two in this section of Job here. Okay, in the first three is the suspended ion, is what it's called. So this is above the line of the rest of the letters. There'll be letters down here, and then this will be up over the top, just kind of hanging out there. And in the last one, in Judges, it's a noon. It's called a noon. It's an N, R-N, or letter N. We don't have an equivalent for this. Okay, in the Psalms one, the Masorah tells you that it's the middle of the Psalter. That's the reason they did for it. They don't give any reason. Nobody knows why it's in Job or Judges. Why they're in Job or Judges. But there's a lot of wild speculation. Usually it revolves around, I think it was a variant that somehow got misplaced. Okay, so those are suspended letters. The next category is called an inverted noon, N-U-N. This is the same noon here, except it's printed in reverse for some reason. And it's done 10 times, and it occurs in all manuscripts, so it probably goes way back. I'll give you all 10 times. The number 10, 35, 36. I'm going to be giving them these categories a bunch of scriptures, so maybe go back in your Bible and you can circle those scriptures, or that way you know, because I'm trying to give a complete list. Usually, nobody picks these up, or sometimes Rotherham will have a comment on them. And some of them wouldn't make any difference in a translation unless you're looking at it in an interlinear. Okay, Psalms 106, 21 to 26, and 40. Genesis 11:32. All right, in this, there's several of them in here, and so it's in these three areas of Scripture that there's 10 times that it's printed in reverse, and the theory being that they were transposed there accidentally, but nobody really knows. It's just speculation. But I mean, if you're reading along like we were in Hebrew class, and you come across a reverse letter and then another one and another one, you wonder, what's going on? What is this? A printed mistake? Oh, no, it's got 10 of them like that. Okay, then the third category is Puncta Extraordinaria.
which is Latin for extraordinary punctuation. Extraordinaria.
Okay.
Now that occurs 15 times. What it is, it's a series of dots over certain words or certain letters. And you come across and all of a sudden you see these big black dots over a word. And you go, well, what's that? That doesn't look like any accent Harry ever taught me. And so he, what it does, it marks spots that were considered grammatically, textually, or exegetically questionable by the Masoretic.
Okay, and I'll give you a list of all 15 of them here. Okay, the fourth category. Okay, they're dots over a word or a letter where the Masoretic considered that word or letter grammatically, textually, or exegetically questionable. And some of them, it just, in other words, it didn't make sense to them that form, it may have just been the form of the word or the letter. Usually there's a comment in the Masorah beside it that tells you why they think that. Sometimes it's just, I haven't looked at all of them, but some of them it just looks like there was theological difficulties in their comprehension of it. Other times it just looks like it's a grammatical problem that maybe maybe a lost form or something that changed forms over a period of time that is grammatically incorrect by the time that they wrote it or they noticed it. There's a variety of reasons, but those 15 they give, they all agree on them. The fourth category is what's called a Sebir, S-E-B-I-R, reading. And in, has everybody got the scripture for you? Interesting, right?
It's in the margins. This is Hebrew for severe. have that in the margin, and what it means, it means literally to think or suppose. Now, they put these in about 350 places in Masoretic Spit. Now, these, where they suspect the correctness of the given reading. Now, they're not, in the last category, the 15 dots were places where they were almost unanimously agreed there was some problem. Okay, these 350 are a variety of importance and opinions. They don't all agree on the number or on whether they're questionable. But they, next to the next category that I'm going to give is important in that they don't change the text at all, but they let you know that they would like to in this place. All right, and they're noted in Biblia and VHS as SEB. It'll just say SEB. It's not on either one of these handouts, but it's in the critical apparatus on the bottom of the page. If it gives a variant, it'll say SEB. And a lot of times it doesn't give you... that just tips you off that that's a severe reading. But they may take a severe reading, or they may take... they may suggest a severe reading, or they may reject it. But they always note it, SEB. So that... I don't have a list of all 350, so I haven't seen them. But they have it in there anyway. It's about 350. That's not a fixed number. That's what Ben Asher, or the Leningrad manuscript that they use, has, apparently. One example here I have down here, Genesis 19:23. If you want to look up in the apparatus, see what it was, VHS. Okay, the fifth category are the Kirei and Ketuv readings. Really, should be the other way around. Ketuv and Kirei. Q-E-R-E. Q-E-R-E. Now these, this is the most important set of variants that the Masoretes themselves give. Okay, this literally means written, and this is read. This is probably everyone's heard of it in varying degrees, different aspects of it anyway. So this is the word to write, and this is the word to read. Okay. Now, in Biblia Hebraica, in the VHS, in the critical apparatus, it will give a K or a Q. Capital K or capital Q. However, they don't always... They always put a K or a Q, but they don't always tell you which one they chose. And they kind of assume that you know the JPS text. They're not real clear on that. JPS text for Q, Kirei, they have just that. And now this letter, K. And now, then they'll give you the reading after that. What they think it, you know, should be. Now they fall down into different categories here. Sometimes it's written what read. Let me just give you the categories. These were corruptions that were noted by probable corruptions that were noted by the Masoretes. They didn't put them in there. They just passed them on. So these go way back. Some of them are in one of these categories. They're attributed to Ezra himself. Undoubtedly, they probably were. Now, on the Kirei, it's what was written in the text has the vowel points of what should be read. Okay, so you come along, it doesn't mean anything to a non-Hebrew student, but you can't read the word usually the way it's pointed. And so it forces you over in the column and it'll say, read so-and-so, and they'll give you the consonants in the column, and you supply the vowel points from the text. They didn't want to put it in the text. They left the text alone, but they put what they thought should be read in the column in the plethora. Okay, so it just has a consonant without the vowel pointing underneath it. The vowel pointing is under what's in the text. Okay, that's what's written and read. Kitab and Kiri. Kitab is written in the text, but it should be read this way. Okay? Because there's the reverse later here that I'll give you. These fall into one category here first. Now, there's what they call perpetual Kiri. The same word with an S on it, just put perpetual in front of it. Perpetual Kiris that are always pronounced one way or spelled one way when it's different in the text, like the tetragrammaton, which we're familiar with. They get the vowel points, okay, there's another one, the most common one in the Pentateuch is written as this. Okay, this is what's written.
Okay. It's just the difference in this letter here. Your vowels.
Okay. This is what's written and this is what's read. There's a strange form in the Pentateuch where this is the feminine pronoun her or it, but it's feminine. There's no neuter. And it always occurs in this form, and nobody really knows why. But it's a good testimony to the fact that there's one author. So, they don't know how to explain that one. But it'll always be in the margin. So the ones that are always that way, they call perpetual Kiri. Okay, the next category now, that was category A. Okay, those were early corrections as noted by the scribes. I didn't give you that. Okay, we're this whole heading now, we're under number 5 here. Okay, the whole heading and A, what I just gave you was early corrections that were noted by the scribes. Okay, now those were, that's the K and Q. But there's other categories, there's others under this heading here. So these are K or Q in VHS, okay? These are your Kiri, Kitab and Kiri readings proper. Now under that heading, then also I gave you perpetual Kiri. Okay? So you get it right away. Okay, now under B, and we're still under number 5 here, they're called Sukun. The word sulfurum with Sukun in front. Okay. Two categories under this, and these are the corrections and omissions of the scribes. Okay, it's called. Everybody got that? All that tikkun means corrections, but it includes additions too. So it's corrections and additions of the scribes. Okay, the first category then would be corrections. Okay, under corrections, there's what's called the 18 emendations 19 emendations of the scribes. Now these were acknowledged changes by the Sophomore. They changed, not the Masoretes, they passed them on, but it was before them that they knowingly corrupted the text. Okay. Now I want to give you all 18. But they're done mainly with respect for God, for it seems that the text degraded it. For example, in Genesis, the first one, Genesis 18:22. Where they've got God standing before Abraham, they changed the text to Abraham standing before God. And they just thought, you know, it showed God as a servant of Abraham. Well, that's what the text says. And there's reasons for it that people argue about. They thought it was degrading God and must be a mistake, so they changed it. So there's 18 places where they changed them. Now, the rest of them, 1822. I'm going to have to start over here. Okay, now we're looking at omission. Before, under this, these particular, okay, these 18 changes here, everybody got, these are in VHS, they're, it says TIQ, T-I-Q, oh, yeah. So if you see that in critical apparatus. It's one of these 18 readings.
I think they just use that for the corrections. I don't think they use it for the additions. I mean the omissions. They use it for the additions. The corrections. Corrections. Okay, now we're on the omissions, another category here. Now, the omissions are of two kinds. Okay, there's number one is words that are read but not written. They indicated words they felt were left out. And they noted that by just putting the vowel points in. They were afraid to put the word in, but they put the vowel point in because they felt the word had dropped out somewhere. Okay, and they put the consonants in the masora in the margin. And noted,
handy formula. I think they both follow this. Okay, this is the word for carry, and this is the word for written. So it's read and not written. Read but not written. And they use this formula, and then they give you read but not written, and then they'll give you the word, the consonants for the word that they just have, the vowel points in the text. Now, this is the opposite of the other one where written where they put the vowel points of the word over here in the margin. Here they've got the vowel points in the, they've got the, all right, you still got the vowel points in the text, okay. I'm going to forget that. This is the second category, I'll straighten it out here. Okay, so this is just the vowel points by themselves. You come along and there'll be a blank space between the letters and you just have some vowel points. Okay, and that calls your attention to the column, and there'll be this little formula here, and then it'll give you the Hebrew word that they think should be in there. Okay, that's number one category. This formula is in the Jewish publication text, but in Biblia Hebraica, they just note it as a correction in the apparatus. They don't give you this formula. Now, as an example, here's the 2 Samuel 8:3. You want to look it up and see what they do with it. In other words, they don't bother giving you the whole formula here. They give you the correction in there. Just what the correction is. They don't give you this formula. Okay, now the second category then, we're still under omissions here, is words written but not read. Now, there's no substitute given in the margin because they felt that these words did not belong in the text. So they're not pointed at all. These don't have any vowel pointing under them at all. So if you run across a word that has no vowel pointing, it means that they felt that the word didn't belong in there, and they don't give any substitution in the column because they feel that it was added in by mistake. Now, the Jewish publication text gives you, it's just the opposite of the other one. Just transpose the words here. Written but not read. Instead of read but not written. Okay. Now, again, Biblia Hebraica just notes it in the apparatus. Or they say that it's deleted by the version. But they don't oftentimes they don't let you know that it's one of these omissions. They just give you that as a comment. So, but I don't want to have to teach you how to use the whole GPS text and DHS too, but if it'll pick it up, usually Rotherham will pick these up. If there's any questions, usually Rotherham. He usually has these. A lot of times he has it under the comments of So Ginsberg thinks, or Ginsberg is sure it should be this way. And usually that's about the best educated guess, but he's not infallible at all. So that's, okay, that's it on that category, number five. These are all Kassab and Keurig, that category. But we've got, besides the 18 emendations of the scribes, we've got,
you said that DHS knows these changes
in their critical apparatus. The only thing that they give is that teak soap for the 18 emendations. Okay. The rest, they just give you what they think is it should be. Or they'll say that the versions stay different. You know, they don't identify specifically other than they'll use a on the first category they'll use a K and Q where they're written in red, in other words, like where you've got the vowel point in the text to the consonants over in the margin. Those they always give you a K. They always give you a K for K and a Q, or they'll give you a K or a Q. On this one, where it's red but not written, they'll put a Q in. So if they have a K or a Q, it's kind of confusing because there's three different categories here that all come under the heading over a period of time. They all got to be thrown into the Kassab and Keurig category of readings, but there's really three different steps within that, plus the 18 acknowledged changes that they made. Okay, so you've got the ones then that have the vowel points here, but the consonants over there, that's the Kassab and Keurig, what's written in the text, but what should be read. That's the first category. And that they know by a K in the bottom, okay. Then the 18 emendations, they know by teak soap. Okay, then the omissions, words read, but not written, where that's just got the vowel points in, and then they'll have the comment in the margin, and they'll put Q in the apparatus, but not always.
That's for written but not written.
No, that's read but not written. Read but not written. In other words, the points are in the text. It's not written in the text, but you read it in. They put the word in the column. The third category is they're written and not read. In other words, they're written. It's a word that's written in the text and it's not read. I don't know if I make that any clearer. There's written and read. Okay, so you've got written and read, read but not written, and written but not read. Okay, is that fairly confusing?
How do they point that out in DHS?
The only thing they do is they give you those, what I said, they give you the K, or they give you a Q, capital K or capital Q, or they'll say teak soap.
So it doesn't tell you which is the problem it is. You gotta figure that out.
Well, if it's a K, it means that it's written one way, but it should be read the other, that first category. If it's a Q, they use that, I think, but I haven't checked it in every place. It's just the vowel point. In other words, there's vowel points there, and they'll tell you what to read. Okay, but they don't know the other here, since the last category, that it's written and not read, there's nothing there. Okay, there's just no vowel point in the text underneath the consonant, so there may be comments in the Masora as to why they think that, but there's nothing given. But now, what they may give in the critical apparatus is what the versions give in place as reports. I don't know. It depends on the individual.
Okay, this last category, Jeremiah 51:3 is an example. If you probably look up these examples, it's going to help at least to have in your notes if you want to go back and unravel it. Rotherham picks up most of this. Okay, the sixth category. Oh, yeah, I do have a list. I don't think I'll give that because it's not a complete list anyway. I'll give you one example in each one. If you want any of the other examples, I can give you more examples in these last two categories. There's an inordinate amount, but there's several dozen. But there's not near as many as the severe reading. So these are the most important readings that they give in the Masorah anyway, the most important variants. So the sixth category, this is the last one under numeral 8, and the various information that's given in the margins in the Masorah. Their opinions on the text, the commentary on the text, they quote frequency of occurrence of words, phrases, so on. And they often give you reference to ancient manuscripts that are no longer in existence. Okay, that's the sixth category. Now, that finishes that whole section off. Any questions? I didn't get the response. It's hard to find that information. That's why, except then I ran across it in the interpreter. So if you can't unravel it all, I think you can sort it out from the interpreter's appendix. If you look up Kitab al-Kiri. Not in the, it gives a discussion in the main one, but in the appendix it gives a lot more condensed discussion.
What was
those are the corrections that the changes that they actually acknowledge making. The scribes, there's 18 corrections, and those are the ones that they're out of respect for God and the text, you know, where it seemed to degrade him, where they changed in 18 places.
Does that have a name?
Tikkun Sofiyim. Well, it's two categories. It's corrections. It's literally, I think, corrections to the scribes. But it includes omissions. That category includes omissions. Sorry, we didn't get in front of you. What I'm going to do next week is just go through the handout, and I'll point out all these little peculiarities in the critical apparatus, and let me lose on assignment. I'll be done with the Hebrew section.
I think I missed that 18. I had Job, and I think there's one after that. I missed one.
Job 7:20 and 32:3.
Amen. 32:3. Yeah.
And then Lamentations 3.
probably about two. Well, that probably means about
four.
Four.
So, and Mike figured, I think, about 6 hours, 4 to 6 hours.
So, that's how you have to next semester?
Yeah, you know, there's no way he did it.
No, he had to whack off right in the middle of where we're at. But we only got. So, yeah, so
they're going to take that.
Are they?
Yeah. They'll take the whole semester. This is being taped, but unless they improve, well, they're using different cases. Yeah.
I have to find out what topics we're doing.